Sleep is essential for human health. Not getting enough sleep or having poor, fragmented sleep increases a person's risk for developing many chronic illnesses, including cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes. With nearly one-third of all adults in the United States reporting that they are sleep deprived, the importance of getting a good night's sleep takes on tremendous significance. And this is why I have brought on Dr. Frank Lipman to the NeuroExperience podcast. Dr. Frank Lipman will be discussing his latest book, Better Sleep, Better You, which is now available for pre-order. If you haven't heard of him before, he's a vocal pioneer of integrative and functional medicine, or what he calls good medicine. Dr. Lipman is the founder of 1111 Wellness Center and the chief medical officer at The Well. He's a sought-after international speaker and the best-selling author of 6 books. Listen along as Dr. Lipman and I go into sleep hygiene, sleep rhythms, how the brain cleans itself during sleep, the effects of light and technology on our circadian rhythms, and much more. But before we move into the episode, I want to thank Athletic Greens for sponsoring. Athletic Greens is an all-in-one vitamin, mineral, and probiotic drink. Our guest today speaks about gut health, and as a physician, he believes that treating the gut first will always win with his patients. The gut microbiome is a complicated subject, which is why I turned to Athletic Greens 2 years ago so I wouldn't have to worry about the nutrients I was missing. If you haven't taken any types of powders before, that's completely fine. The way I use Athletic Greens is I mix one scoop into a water with ice each morning after the gym. It's completely easy to use. And guess what, guys? It actually tastes good. If you want to try Athletic Greens, you can use my code, which is NEURO, and you will receive 5 travel packs and a 1-year supply of vitamin D3K2. You just have to go to athleticgreens.com/neuro to claim this offer. So if you are like me and you are missing nutrients in your diet, or you just don't have time, you may want to think about even researching on the effects of what this wonderful, powerful supplement can do for you. So just go to www.athleticgreens.com/neuro to get the Athletic Greens, the travel pack, and a 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2. Without further delay, let's get into the episode. Neuroscience, neurology, longevity, and beyond. Learn everything you need to know from the best physicians and experts in the world. The NeuroExperience podcast is a platform to help you understand what the brain is and how it shapes every part of our lives. Every episode comes to you from highly credible sources. I'm Louisa Nicola, medical neuroscientist from Australia, living in New York City. Come and take a NeuroExperience with me. You know, I really love how you're combining the Eastern therapies with the Western side of medicine. And I know that in some parts of America, at least, there are some parts who believe, especially in New York, maybe, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, where they think acupuncture, that's not a thing, especially amongst the pain side and the pain physicians. Whereas you go to San Diego, for example, I've got a very good friend who brought in Eastern therapies such as acupuncture into the ICU setting and really developed an Eastern therapy program for all of their pain management patients. And I thought that was very interesting, because when you're in the field and you're in the thick of it, you really just learn how to treat with medicine and with pharmaceuticals, et cetera. So I really love that you found this and then moving into functional medicine. So why did you think, okay, I'm going to write a book on sleep? And that's going to be the bulk of our episode, because it's something that I speak about and the audience knows that too. They know, Louisa, just, you know, I really go into sleep physiology, because in my opinion, if you want to move the lever backwards in terms of longevity, if you really want to be able to live longer, for me, I really think that it really does come down to exercise. You know, it comes down to sleep, and then it comes down to nutrition. And I would love to know your opinion on why you why you actually went into the sleep field and why you authored a book.
Right. Well, I think really going to the sleep field, it sort of just came, you know, that's my seventh book. The one I wrote just before that was on how to age well. You know, now I'm 66, almost 67. As you know, I've written books on all sorts of, you know, general health. As you get older, you start changing or realizing you've got to adapt to what's going on. You know, I have a grandson. I want to see my grandson grow older. I want to be vital and enjoy my grandson. So you start, you know, obviously doing this functional medicine, I was always into nutrition and exercise and supplements and anything that helped people get healthy. But as I got older, I realized I had to start changing some, adapting. Things change once, you know, I see the body from once when you're up to 40, and then once you're after 40, you've got to adapt. And as I explored the research and explored what to talk about in my anti-aging book, sleep sort of came to the fore much more. And as you get older, you know, your sleep, you've got to pay more attention to your sleep, because sleep doesn't, you know, you've got to, in a way, work at it, because sleep easily gets off as you get older. You know, there are many things that will screw up your sleep cycle, but aging doesn't help. So I started paying more attention to sleep, and I happened to, you know, one of my patients who I then became friendly with, who I helped, was one of the founders of Casper.
Yes.
And they and Neil wanted to change Casper more into a sleep company, because he was fascinated by sleep and he wanted Casper to be much more than mattresses and to be a sleep company. So he asked me to be an advisor for Casper. So I started having to, you know, in a way, it just happened automatically. I just had to learn more and more about sleep. So just from my own personal journey, from my patients' experiences, because sleep, even in functional medicine or in integrative medicine, is there. We always talk about sleep, but, you know, people don't really understand it or pay enough attention to it. And it's probably one of the biggest factors in why people have all sorts of problems. So just from my experience in my practice, from my own experience as I got older, and then this sort of partnering with Casper, I just got more and more into sleep. And then I can't remember how the book came about, to be quite honest. I'm not sure how we decided to write a book. But, you know, we were just, as we got more friendly, he was kept on sending me about, he said, have you seen this gadget? Have you seen this gadget? Does this help? So I sort of got immersed into a lot of the sleep literature and sleep gadgets because of Neil. He sort of just kept like, have you seen this? Did you read this? Did you read that? I mean, I was always aware of or intrigued by rhythm and circadian rhythms in general. Mm. In general, I wrote one of my books many, many years ago, I can't even remember, was on fatigue. It was called Spent, then became called Revive. It was all about how when you're out of rhythm, you get tired. So I always had this thing about sleep, but I never paid enough attention to it until I got older and then got involved with Casper.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that there is a misconception in the world and in society around sleep, where people believe that there's this bulk of information around quantity, and I think we're not paying attention to quality. So I saw an interview that you did, and you spoke around sleep rhythms and also around how things such as light exposure and technology disrupt our circadian rhythms, but also our sleep cycles. So what is it that you found around that?
Well, you know, the way I see sleep, I'm not a researcher. You probably know more than I do. The way I see sleep is your primary rhythm. And when your rhythms are off, your sleep will be off. When your sleep is off, your body rhythms are off. And I'm all about, you know, And I saw this working in the bush in Africa. You know, people had to live with the rhythms of nature. There was no electricity or very little electricity. They woke up when the sun rose and they went to bed, you know, when it was dark. You know, they had kerosene lamps and that, some people, but for the most part, they lived in with the rhythms and cycles of nature. What they could grow was dependent on what season it was, you know, when they got up, when they went to sleep. So, and I didn't see the types of diseases I saw in Johannesburg, in the big city, even when I was at the Black Hospital. So the type of problems we saw at the Mission Hospital, at the hospital in the bush, were very different. There were people who were acutely ill. They were, you know, acute problems, broken bones, and they didn't have those typical problems which were these Western diseases which we started seeing in the big city. So I started getting into rhythm, and the other part of it is I was always a music freak and had noticed how rhythm and different musics affected my moods, and I could get happy with certain music, I could chill out with certain music. So I learned to entrain to the music. So I was always intrigued by rhythms per se. I realized that sleep, and the one factor that people don't talk enough about with sleep is it's a rhythm. And light, you know, we don't get enough natural light during the day, and then we have all this artificial light at night. And so you're confusing the body, because the body, you know, although we live now, you know, it's in the 21st century, our genes are still the genes of our ancient ancestors. So it's very, you know, you in a way trying to override sort of these genes, which are used to going to sleep when you're dark, or being affected by when the light starts getting duller and duller and you start getting ready for sleep. Your body has these rhythms which are used to that type of cycle, and we ignore that, or we don't respect that. And so we have the lights on late at night, we on our computers, we on our tablets, whatever it is, and that obviously is going to affect our rhythms and our sleep. So to me, sleep is all about rhythm. And if you can get back into rhythm, you're going to sleep better. Because, you know, once again, sleep is a symptom of something out of balance. It's not, you know, that's the way I see sleep problems. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't normally just naturally go to bed, fall asleep, and all is good. When that's not happening, you've got to see why. There's, you know, the metaphor I always use, if you're driving the car and the oil light goes on, you don't just put a band-aid over the oil light. You don't just take a sleeping pill. You want to see why that oil light went on. So that's the way I see sleep. It's very, you know, it's all about rhythm.
There's this wonderful article that was published in PNAS. And what they showed, they took a group of healthy adults and they deprived them of sleep. And what they did was they deprived them to 6 hours a day for only 7 days. And they found just in that time frame that there was an upregulation and a downregulation of certain genes. Yep. And it changed the human genome by 3%. We've got 20,000 genes in the human genome. So in order to change 3%, that's a whopping number. I think that was the most profound thing I read. And that's when I thought, oh my God, this is going to be monumental in order to, you know, for me and my practice, when I put in these sleep protocols for, you know, we're watching the NBA playoffs right now. And I look at some of my boys and I'm like, you know, I'm rigorously tracking their sleep, their HRV. And I know that if I'm able to get them on a proper sleep schedule, because consistency is a very big thing, minimizing light exposure, going out and activating the circadian rhythm with natural sunlight, I know that they're going to play better on the field. And everybody's different. You know, I get people saying, but Louisa, I'm just a normal person. Why do I need to be, you know, optimizing for sleep? But you speak about this a lot. It does play a role in the aging process. Sleep does play a role in the aging process.
A major role. And not only that, you talk about upregulating genes. That's really interesting because, you know, I'm a big proponent of doing some genetic testing, especially the genes that you can upregulate and downregulate. And a lot of the time we do that with nutrition. and exercise and supplements, but sleep. I mean, that's interesting. Send me that paper. That's interesting that you said that, because to me, sleep is one of those forgotten lifestyle changes that can upregulate and downregulate our genes. And I think that's really important. And you know, most people, unfortunately, you know, view sleep as a sort of, you know, thing that you, you know, is a nuisance that I don't really have time for. Mm-hmm. And you know, don't understand how much is happening in your body to you know, to recover, or you know, to do all the things it does while you sleep. So yeah, I think sleep doesn't get its due.
Mm. And just FYI, the genes that were upregulated were the genes responsible for tumor growth, and the ones that were downregulated were the genes responsible for immunity. So I think that plays in well. And then from that, they then took the studies and saw the correlation between SARS-CoV-2, the vaccine, and sleep. So it's all intertwined. So, and then there was another thing that I wanted to touch on, and that was around the amount of pollution and toxins that we build up on a daily basis. I just did a podcast episode last week, and I touched on the glymphatic system, which is this sewage-like system in the brain. However, it really only gets activated during slow wave sleep. Now, that's at the beginning of the night. And so I think that that's a very big thing to pick up on, because just because you're going to sleep and you're sleeping 10 hours a night, if you're not getting into slow wave sleep, you're not activating the glymphatic system, and you're not clearing away these metabolites that just go into your brain.
Absolutely. I think that's really important. You know, people don't realize that we have this, you know, we have this cleaning system, this detox system, this natural garbage collecting, cleanup and garbage collection and removal all at once in our brain. And it only happens when you sleep. So, you know, the metaphor I always use is, if you have a party and you leave a mess and you don't clean it up, there'll be a mess there. And then you have another party the next night. The mess gets greater and greater, and you keep on having these parties, the mess gets bigger and bigger. Mm. And if you're not sleeping, that mess is not going to get cleaned up. So all that mess is happening in your brain. So, and most people sort of can relate to the fact that most people will tell me, if they haven't slept well or not sleeping properly for a couple of nights, they tend to get a cold, or they get sick, or they're not as, their cognitive function decreases a little bit. So most people, when you start digging deeper, as a doctor speaking to patients, I'm saying, most people, when you start sort of penetrating in and asking questions and taking a good history, will sort of acknowledge or realize that sleep is an issue, or when they don't sleep, certain things happen. So I think people are becoming aware of it, but they don't automatically think about it.
One of the things that I've been trying to learn more about, I guess, as it relates to the aging process, longevity is just such an interesting thing to study and look into, especially I want to go and do a telomere test just to see like how long my telomeres are and maybe predict how long I have on this earth. But gut microbiome seems to be a topic that is widely discussed and yet so very underappreciated. And I think it's because it is an entirely new universe living within us. And even myself, I find it difficult to understand at times. Are you doing any testing for your patients?
Oh, I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with the microbiome. In fact, if I wasn't, my next book would be all about the gut and the microbiome. So most of my patients that I see now are gut problems and problems with the microbiome. So yeah, do I do testing? Yes, I do sometimes, but not everyone, because the testing is in its infancy. I do a specific test, which I find to be the most accurate of all the tests out there. It's called the Gut Zoomer. I like it. How accurate it is tricky, because your microbiome changes all the time, and there's so many factors. But I do find it can be helpful, because it measures inflammatory markers, it measures butyrate levels, it measures different strains of the good bacteria and bad bacteria, parasites, yeast. So it can be helpful, but you're often left with still you guessing. But my experience has been, first of all, sleep affects the microbiome in a huge way. There are actually more and more studies about that. And the microbiome affects your sleep. So in my practice, often the first thing I'm doing, because to me it's what I call the low-hanging fruit, is trying to correct the microbiome. And so many people some people call it small SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or some dysbiosis, some imbalance in the bugs. And many people are going to need antimicrobials to balance the gut. To me, the gut is in a way like sleep, because if you're not sleeping properly, you're going to have a problem. And once again, if your gut is not functioning well, or you have gut problems, that's going to affect your health in general, your sleep, and definitely longevity.
I think, yeah, it's definitely a topic that, I mean, I don't know if I want to look at the test that you were just describing. I've done a my Viome, I think it's called, test.
Yeah. I don't find that helpful.
No?
No, I don't. Yeah. First of all, look, I'm not saying there is the gold standard for gut testing, because I don't think there is a gold standard. But in all my, I've played around with different ones over the years, and I found this Gut Zoomer to be the one that I like, that gives me the most clinical information that I can use with people. Mm. But you know, it's a tricky area to measure, and a lot of the times you don't actually need a test. What you need to do is play around with your diet, or you remove certain foods. Sometimes you need to add antimicrobials. Sometimes you need to add prebiotics more than probiotics. Probiotics are very tricky, actually, you know, because everyone's gut is so different. Sometimes probiotics can make things worse. They can do nothing. And sometimes they help. So it's literally a crapshoot. I'm a bigger fan of prebiotics and resistant starch, which is, you know, it's the fiber that actually feeds the good bacteria. But the gut is tricky. But I love treating the gut, because it's not well treated in Western medicine at all.
I'd love to just move into this realm of different types of medicine. You know, you mentioned earlier, offline, your brother is in Australia, where I'm from, and that the medical field is completely different. And I have to admit, like, it's the way that medicine is in Australia is completely different. You'd think that it's universal. You'd think, okay, but everything is different in Australia. And then it's different here, and obviously in South Africa as well. 2021 has brought about a number of different changes since the pandemic. When it comes to the medical field, what do you think that we're lacking? Are we not progressive enough? And let's just focus on the US.
Yeah. There are a couple of problems, I think. First of all, everything is siloed. First let's go into Western medicine is really crisis care medicine. Western medicine it's hospital-based medicine. If you're acutely ill, you need Western medicine. Mm-hmm. They don't understand, you know, you work with athletes, they don't really understand sleep. They don't understand the muscular skeletal system. They have no tools to optimize function. So it's very limited. There's an important place for Western medicine, an extremely important place. You know, if I broke my wrist, I came off my bike, I broke my wrist, I went straight to hospital for special surgery, and I got the best surgeon, and I had the surgery, and, you know, I needed that. But if you don't have aren't acutely ill, or you don't need sort of hospital per se, Western medicine is not that great. So that's where functional medicine comes in, where we sort of much better at looking for the underlying issues, at addressing the underlying issues that will cause and present with chronic problems. But then, even so, I think what we have today, everything is very siloed. So you go to you know, you've got your Western doctor, and then you'll go to your physical therapist for the musculoskeletal stuff. Then we now have all the biohacking and the measurements, and everyone's just measuring one little part. No one is putting it all together. There's no real integrative approach. Like you're working with athletes. Mm-hmm. To me, the future, and that's what I'm working on, to me, the future is putting all of this together. So you put all, you know, the wearables, measuring blood glucose, measuring sleep, measuring whatever you can measure yourself with your Whoop or whatever it is. You can do blood testing, you can do genetic testing, you can do poop testing, and trying to put all that information together and help people interpret this information and get them, you know, to make lifestyle changes and get them to be healthy. I think that's where it's all heading, and that's the future. Then on top of that, where you, the patient, own the information. So wherever you go, you can take it to the hospital or wherever, or doctor, wherever you're going. So I think that's the future, you know, with AI and tech. I think that's happening. And it's happening quite quickly, where you'll be able to do all of this outside of a doctor's office. And more important, you'll own the information. It won't be owned by the doctor. So I think that's where it's heading.
Why is that an important factor, to own your own information?
Well, because my philosophy is you need to be in charge of your own health. I mean, why, you know, if the doctor has your information and you in New York, and let's say you work with athletes, and you come to New York and you get injured or something happens to you, or you go to LA, wherever, you know, you go somewhere else, something happens to you and you go to the hospital, you go to a doctor, they don't have access to that information. If you know what your sleep cycles are, your HRV or whatever it is, I mean, that's all helpful information that when you go to see a doctor, they won't have unless you have all that information with you. So I think it would be helpful in the, you know, we're talking about the future of medicine, that if you go to a doctor who's aware of this and he sees that, oh, your sleep's been off, your HRV is lower, your blood sugar has spiked, whatever it is, oh, something's going on. You'll pick up problems way before you'll pick up dis-ease before disease presents. So it's a real preventive medicine. You'll pick up problems before they become problems.
I think one of the issues that I have is with standard testing, even when you go into blood glucose monitoring, for example, the standard measurements of, you know, HDL and LDL is below 100. And I think that should be, you know, changed down to below 90, for example, rather than, you know, I see so many people getting a blood test saying, well, I'm on track, I'm at 101. I'm on track with my blood glucose. And I think that this whole normative for, you know, where you should be sitting in terms, I think everybody should be having their own measurements. Like you said, everybody should be their own doctor, because why should I, you know, as a fit 30-year-old female, have the same type of benchmarks as a 60-year-old man? So, but in order to really understand that, it takes a lot of time and not everybody really delves into that. So I think you're right. It's not just about the tool per se, like the 23andMe gene test. You can go and do the 23andMe, but who is giving you the report? How do we know what to do with that?
Exactly. So this is what's happening now, where you ask what the problems are. There are all of these different tests out there. They're all siloed. There's 23andMe. You go to a doctor, you get your bloods done, you can get your poop done. What I'm seeing a lot with my patients who want to optimize, you know, because I'm seeing people come with gut problems, I'm seeing more and more people who want to optimize, you know, they have their rings and they have all this information and they don't know what the hell to do with the information.
Exactly, exactly.
So that's basically what I am, part of a team working on that, to actually help solve that problem, where, you know, how do you help people interpret the information, because the interpretation of the information, I think, is key, because we're getting more and more information. A lot of it's not coming from the traditional medical system, but because of the whole biohacking world and because of this whole, you know, all these sleep studies and what, people are getting more information about their bodies, but they're not sure how to interpret it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of at the disadvantage of the consumer and or the patient, because they've got, I see so many people posting about their HRV, but when I ask them, well, do you even know what that is and what, why you have a low heart rate variability? They say, well, no, it just, my HRV is low. So I think you're onto something with that. And I'm very excited to track your journey. What's the, so right now you're in New York City and you're working on these new developments within that space.
Yeah, right now I'm in New York City. I have a practice, in New York City. I'm also chief medical officer of The Well, which is this health club in New York City. I'm sort of being asked to sort of help as a medical director, or for lack of another term, with helping develop or being part of the medical aspect of developing some type of platform where we will help people interpret their sleep information, their exercise data, their nutrition information, their microbiome, you know, trying to put all of this information together and help people on their journeys to health. Because same as in the old days, it was, I felt, you know, there's Western medicine and Chinese medicine just siloed, and we try to put it together in functional medicine. I think there's more, there needs to be more integration today with this availability of all this extra information that people can access through wearables or this new type of testing that people are doing. So I think it's the next wave of medicine, same as, you know, in 1984, I saw the future of medicine combining Western and Eastern medicine. Now I see the future of medicine combining the Western medicine, these lifestyle changes, sleep medicine, wearables, all of this, and the ability to actually, you know, put it into one place and track it and actually be in charge of it and actually monitor your own health. I mean, to me, that's a future. And especially if you're working with athletes, this is what athletes need to do. I mean, you'll be able to pick up before an athlete goes to play if something's going to be off. You know, same as, you know, to me, for athletes, you know, I have a close friend who works with athletes a lot on the musculoskeletal aspect. I mean, you can pick up, you know, really fine movements, you know, if they're not pushing off properly on their right ankle because they have some tightness in their right calf, it's going to affect their arm for shooting type of thing. So there are all this fine tuning that can be done, whether it's on the physical body, on sleep, on nutrition, on all these aspects of health. And if you can put it all into one place, to me, that's the future of medicine.
Well, please, when you have that available, please let us all know, because I am waiting eagerly for that. Thank you so much for being part of the Neuro Experience podcast. I'm going to link everything at the bottom of this episode, your Twitter, your all of your social media pages and your website. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Louisa. Okay.